Text 15 this morning, Canto 7, Chapter 5. Shri Narada Uvacha Etavad Brahmana Yoktva Vira Rama Mahamatehi Tam sani bharsya kupitaha. Sudino raja sevakaha. Shri Narada uvacha. Etavad brahmana yoktva. Vira rama mahamatihi. Tam sani bharsya kupitaha. Sudino raja sevakaha. Shri Narada uvacha. Narada Muni said, etavat, this much, brahmanaya, unto the brahmanas, the sons of Shukracharya. Uktva, speaking, Vira Rama, became silent. Mahamatihi, Prahlad Maharaj, who possessed great intelligence. Tam, him, Prahlad Maharaj. Sani Bhartsya, chastising very harshly. Kopitaha, being angry. Sudinaha, poor in thought, or very much aggrieved. Raja Sevakaha, the servants of King Hiranyakashipu. Translation, the great Saint Narada Muni continued, the great soul Prahlad Maharaj became silent after saying this to his teachers Shanda and Amarka, the seminal sons of Shukracharya. These so-called brahmanas became angry at him because they were servants of Hiranyakashipu. They were very sorry, and to chastise Prahlad Maharaj, they spoke as follows. Purport. The word Shukra means semen. The sons of Shukracharya were brahmanas by birthright, but an actual brahmana is one who possesses the brahminical qualities. The brahmanas, Shanda and Amarka, being seminal sons of Shukracharya, did not actually possess real brahminical qualification, for they engaged as servants of Hiranyakashipu. An actual brahmana is very much satisfied to see anyone, not to speak of his disciple, become a devotee of Lord Krishna. Such brahmanas are meant to satisfy the Supreme Master. A brahmana is strictly prohibited from becoming a servant of anyone else, for that is the business of dogs and sudras. A dog must satisfy his master, but a brahmana does not have to satisfy anyone, semicolon. He is simply meant to satisfy Krishna. Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam. That is the real qualification of a brahmana. Because Shanda and Amarka were seminal brahmanas and had become servants of such a master as Hiranyakashipu, they unnecessarily wanted to chastise Prahlad Maharaj. Some of you may be familiar, when I was reading this, thinking of the essay or paper, composition that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had prepared, Brahmanism and Vaishnavism, to address an assembly of scholarly persons who were having a heated disagreement, bordering on life-threatening disagreement, between the merits of the superiority of a Brahmana, or eligibility and superiority in turn of a Vaishnava. Many scriptural references were presented by Bhaktisiddhanta in that paper, and then in turn a public presentation in an assembly of learned scholars who were literally at each other's throats. And the exalted position of, in Vedic culture, of a Brahmana was the first, like the first day. The exalted position of a learned Brahmana is extolled again and again and again in our scriptures, and including in Srimad Bhagavatam. We, let's say, refer to the importance of Mataji, when you want to stop clicking your text message program, it's disturbing the other devotees. Thanks. The exalted nature of Brahmanas is described in the first canto as honoring Brahminical culture. Just to say it real fast, honoring Brahminical culture means, in the perspective of Srimad Bhagavatam, Brahmanas that are the kind of Brahmanas that are being spoken of in the purport, Brahmanas meaning that they know what is Brahman, they know the absolute truth, and the absolute truth, in the second half of Bhaktisiddhanta's paper, the second day, was explaining this point. To know Brahman means to know the Supreme Brahman, to know the personality of Godhead, because Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, amongst many, many, many references, that which is the effulgence comes from the effulgent. The Bhagavan feature of the Supreme is the ultimate feature of the Supreme, upon which rests Brahman. So Brahman realization is a partial realization. We all know these teachings. And therefore, Brahmana means, or he would, in his expression, the mature stage of a Brahmana is a Vaishnava, must be. To know Brahman is a duty of a, or qualification of a Brahmana. And the mature realization of Brahman is Bhagavan, the personal feature, which a subset of which is both Paramatma and Brahman. Maybe some of you remember Radhika Raman's presentation when he was here, I think. He did his PhD thesis on a segment of one of the six Sandarbhas, just to appreciate. His PhD thesis at Oxford University was on four verses from Paramatma Sandarbha. So imagine how many PhD theses can be rendered out of the entire Paramatma, the entire Sandarbhas. His language is that when Bhagavan, in the sequence of the sandarbhas, there's Tattva Sandarbha, Bhagavat Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, Krishna Sandarbha. Those are dealing with Sambandha. And it's Jiva Goswami starts with Bhagavat Sandarbha, the understanding of Bhagavan. So someone may raise the question, someone has raised the question, well, why didn't he start with Brahman, then Paramatma, then Bhagavan? Because that's how it's presented in Srimad Bhagavatam, that one verse, Vedanta tat tattva vidas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabyate. So shouldn't it be 1, 2, 3 instead of 3, 2, 1? And his response to that is no, because Bhagavatam presents Bhagavan. And Bhagavan, we did this when we covered our Vyasadeva's trance, his realization in trance. Radhika Raman's presentation is when the fullness of Bhagavan is suppressed, meaning not all of Krishna's qualities in Goloka Vrindavan are manifest, then we have Vishnu or Narayana. Yes, 60 qualities, and then there's 64 qualities. So the fullness of Bhagavan is Krishna in Vrindavan. And then there's Narayana, which is the same, they're in the same tattva. And then the Vishnu features, they have that aspect also. It's not, that's a nice word, suppressed. The fullness is not exhibited. So the Paramatma feature of the personality of Godhead is, you know, we say Krishna's in the heart of every living entity. Krishna's in the heart of every living entity. As in the form of his expansion as Shirodakshai Vishnu. That's an expansion of an expansion. Or to make it like really crystal clear in English language, a portion of a plenary portion. An expansion of an expansion. But even a portion of a plenary portion means the fullness of Bhagavan Sri Krishna is not fully manifest in Krishna in the form as Paramatma within the heart. Krishna is within the heart of every living being. And there are some aspects of him that are shared by Krishna himself. Anyway. To know Brahman or to know Paramatma does not necessarily indicate knowing Bhagavan. One may know Brahman, but not know Paramatma. So a Vaishnava is one who at least is knowledgeable of and accepts the position of being subordinate servant of Vishnu. That's what Vaishnava means. Worshipper of Vishnu, Vaishnava. So the indication that we're receiving in the purport is a true Brahmana, same as Bhaktisiddhanta's essay, a true Brahmana in his mature stage is a Brahmana. So he can put the two words together and say Brahmana Vaishnava. Or just one of them, Brahmana, Brahmana implies Vaishnava. And then conversely, Vaishnava implies, at least if one continues to pursue proper Vishnu worship, particularly according to the Panchatantrika system provided within the Vedas, then one becomes a qualified Brahmana, which is what the Gaudiya tradition observes. And that was, in fact, the issue that Bhaktisiddhanta was kind of mediating. It gets a little touchy or like technical. Specifically, a Vaishnava may do this and that, but those that are seminal brahmanas say something that a Vaishnava cannot do is perform rituals. They cannot be the priest that performs rituals. You know, sacrifices according to the Vedic culture, according to that perspective. You must be born in a certain family, and born in a certain family, be trained according to the procedures of Brahminical culture, and then receive, after that training, Upanayana, Brahminical, Gayatri initiation, and then further studies of the Vedas, and then take a deep breath, and then you can do the rituals. That's that perspective. There are explicit verses. Rupa Goswami goes into this. Bhaktisiddhanta similarly went into it in fine detail, which says devotees, Vaishnavas, can perform Vedic rituals by the dint of becoming qualified worshippers of Vishnu. So, we're worshippers of Vishnu, or being trained to be worshippers of Vishnu. It takes training. It's not snap your fingers, okay, I believe, like some ideas of modern theology says, I just accept such and such and voila. It's not that. It requires very clearly training. For an uncultured person can become cultured. A person without prior sanskaras, prior purificatory rituals, can become, that's one path, the Vaidika path, and then the Pancharatrika path. I hope I'm not losing our new people. But the system that Bhaktisiddhanta was supporting, in which he was part of, although his birth was qualifying, as the seminal sons of Shukracharya were qualifying, they're disqualified. They're disqualified in many ways. Anyway, we'll come back to Shukracharya's sons. Just the principle first. One becomes qualified by submission to the practices or the procedures followed by the Pancharatrika system. Exactly that was the issue that was being contested in this assembly. And volumes of scriptural support for to the fact that one who is trained according to the Pancharatrika system becomes not only qualified to perform rituals, but is better than one who is qualified to perform rituals. It's the mature fruit or the mature stage of being a brahmana, that is to understand Vishnu. And that's, it's an easy thing to say, understand Vishnu. Part of it is, it starts with proper hearing and a theoretical understanding and acceptance. And as we were discussing the other evening, it actually requires realization, purification, application, and, exhibiting the qualities of. But the first quality, what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita about, the symptoms of knowledge? There's two that are highlighted. It's chapter 13, texts, 8 through 12. Acharya Upasana, and what's the Sanskrit for accepting the position of Krishna? Undivided devotional service to Krishna. Mai chananya yogena bhakti avyabhicharini. Yes? Mai chananya cha ananya. Mai chananya yogena bhakti avyabhicharini. Undivided devotion to the personality of Godhead. That's it. One who has that position, then the other qualifications follow. Yes? That's what the scriptures, that's what Bhagavad Gita is teaching. And all other symptoms of knowledge follow. And that's transcendental knowledge. Not just knowledge of how to do a ritual. Because one who may have knowledge of how to do a ritual and not know transcendence. There's a little description. Just here's an example, a nice example. This is now, other Puranas glorify Srimad Bhagavatam as the superlative amongst all the Puranas, and to identify what is its characteristics, one of them is where Hayagriva speaks transcendental knowledge to the Ashvini Kumaras. Who are the Ashvini Kumaras? Ashvini Kumaras are physicians. Vaidya, they're physicians in the heavenly kingdom. And the Ashvini Kumaras wanted transcendental knowledge. They're physicians. They had knowledge. They knew they were, you know, they were thoroughly, vastly learned in one section of the Vedas, and they knew, you know, the ABCs of the Vedas. But they wanted transcendental knowledge. So they went to a very liberal person named Didichi, who had transcendental knowledge, not just the other kind, the Vedic knowledge of how to do rituals and other things. So Didichi, being a liberal Brahmana, he said, sure, I'll give you transcendental knowledge. But I'm busy right now with some activities. Just come back a little bit later. So he gave his Brahminical word, and he has to keep his Brahminical word, because that's what Brahmanas do. They keep their word once they give it. Then Indra found out. And there was some competition between Indra and Ashvini Kumaras. So Indra came to the Brahmana, Didichi, and said, don't give them transcendental knowledge. They're just physicians. They're not demigods. They're physicians in the realm of the demigods. And if you give them transcendental knowledge, I'll cut off your head. So, what's a nice Brahmana to do? Keep your word or lose your head. So after some time, the Ashvini Kumaras came back and said, okay, we're ready. Are you ready? He said, well, I finished what I was doing, but there's a little problem. What's that? Indra said, if I give you transcendental knowledge, he's going to cut off my head. But I have to keep my word. And they said, well, we have a practical solution. We're royal physicians. We're heavenly physicians. Here's what we can do. We can cut off your head, put on a horse's head, and then through the horse's head, you can give transcendental knowledge. And then when Indra finds out you gave us transcendental knowledge, you'll come and cut off your horse's head, and we'll come back and put on your regular head. How's that? And the Didichi said, sure, that's a very good solution. So they cut off his head, put on a horse's head, threw his horse's head. So his Veda Shira, or Ashva Shira, or each of those terms mean one who gives knowledge through the mouth or the head of a horse. Because Lord Vishnu accepted that form and gave that knowledge to the Kumaras in that way. But this is another, Jiva Goswami clarifies, because there's reference to the Ashvini Kumaras, it means Didichi, who gave knowledge through the horse's head. Indra came, kept his promise, he cut off his head, and Ashvini Kumaras gave him back his head. Everyone lived happily ever after. Except Indra. So there's a distinction between, this is an example, there's a distinction between Vedic knowledge and transcendental knowledge. One of the appreciations specifically of Bhagavad Gita is it gives transcendental knowledge within the context of this great Mahabharata that teaches so many things, but dharma and adharma, good and evil, right and wrong, how a discriminating, pious person should lead their life. So much of that is also in Ramayana. But there are sections within Mahabharata, Bhagavad Gita being most prominent, but there are others that are especially focused on transcendental knowledge. The point being, transcendental knowledge has its distinction from just how to propitiate the devas through Vedic sacrifices by chanting of Vedic mantras and following certain procedures and so on for material prosperity and elevation to the heavenly planets. Transcendental knowledge is a whole other category. It's a whole other category. And brahmanas, there are categories. Some just know how to do the rituals. They're called purohits. They're family priests that you want this or that. You go to the purohit who does a yajna for this or that. We're having a little discussion. I don't want to get too much into contemporary controversies, but I'll just touch on one. Please don't ask questions about it. There was this document floating around about Purushottam month. I didn't read it, but some of my God brothers and God sisters read it, and they said, yikes, this is Karmakanda. Did you read the document? You heard about it. So that we observe, for example, we observe Ekadasi. It's Vaishnava practice. We observe Ekadasi. And there's degrees to which we can observe Ekadasi, and they're described in our literature, Vaishnava literature. You may know this, you may not know this, but those that aren't Vaishnavas, they also observe Ekadasi, and they have their rituals and their thises and thats in order to get this and that. When there's 24 of them every year, and they have different names, and you this one, you do those things, and you get, voila, you get health. Or you get money, or you get something. Good children, or, you know, things that people want in this world. Not Vishnu, but things of this world. So once upon a time, a devotee, who wasn't exactly a devotee, but he was in a devotee dress, he made a translation of those Karmakanda things and published the book, and people went, wow, get these things, those things, those things. Jai Jagadisha Hare. And it became popular for a while until the little light went on and said, wait a minute, this is not Vaishnava. It's fulfilling. So Ekadasi and Ekadasi. The Vedas and the Vedas. There's elevation and there's transcendence. And we observe Ekadasi, we observe Purushottam month, we observe auspicious occasions, we have procedures and ceremonies and things. We have yajnas. Vishnu, our lives, the training that we're receiving is Vaishnava training, to go to the realm of transcendence. So this verse, back to the Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj is called Mahamati, Mahamati, one who possesses great intelligence. And what's the symptom of his great intelligence? Well, the fundamental principle of great intelligence is he's taking shelter of Lord Vishnu. Now, he's amongst those who take shelter of Lord Vishnu, he's great. But anyone who takes shelter of Lord Vishnu, they should be considered unique and special. Even if, there's a nice verse in Tattvasandarbha, text 23, after establishing that the, there's a whole section that the Itihasas and the Puranas are Vedic, he goes on to describe, after saying, and now it's been established, the Itihasas and the Puranas are Vedic. He adds, the chanting of the holy name of Krishna specifically is such that one surpasses all these rituals, and it's to be understood that one has already achieved them all just by regularly chanting the holy name of Krishna. The holy name of Krishna is so super excellent, and says other things, statements from scripture saying that. Similarly, this Puranic literature, and specifically the Srimad Bhagavatam, one who studies regularly Srimad Bhagavatam, all those things that one can achieve from those other activities, it's a subset. It's included. It's so special, so glorious. What is our qualification? Answer, zero or minus. But somehow we receive some good fortune. What's that? The association of someone, our founder Acharya, to give this Srimad Bhagavatam in the holy name. And he's entrusted to us the opportunity, the privilege, the service of giving the holy name to others and the Srimad Bhagavatam to others. What's our qualification? Zero. Except that we receive some mercy. And all you have to do is, say yes. And to say yes means a whole bunch of things. To say yes doesn't mean just profess and do something else. Say yes means to do. Follow. Cultivate. Anushilana. Cultivate the activities of bhakti. And these endowments come. So once again, back to something spoken earlier. Krishna Eka Sharana. Or Bhaktir Avyabhicharini. Just take shelter of the personality of Godhead and devotion to him. And items of knowledge will come, and good qualities will come. The qualities of the Brahmana, in principle, they're accessible, that one can become decorated with them simply from taking shelter of the personality of Godhead. It's a very powerful process, even for disqualified people or unqualified people, just descending mercy. We just say yes, in a broader way of saying yes. We follow. Turn your receivers on and keep receiving and connecting with that descending mercy, and one becomes lifted. There's effort, but one becomes lifted by mercy. And again, back to the verse, Shukracharya, the very name means he was a Brahmana by birth, and his sons were then in turn similarly Brahmanas by birth. So is there a distinction between Brahmanas by birth and Brahmana by qualification? Yes. They were Brahmanas by birth, but disqualified. What was the disqualification? They were servants of Hiranyakashipu. Not just Brahmanas guiding Hiranyakashipu, they were literally servants of Hiranyakashipu. You know this description of Sanatan and Rupa and Anupam, because they took the servants of Nawab Hussein Shah. They considered themselves, and society considered them, to be fallen, no longer Brahmana. Why? Because they took the service of Nawab Hussein Shah. It's that simple. Now, they didn't lose their qualification. Why? Because they retained their position of servant of Vishnu or Krishna. But socially, they accepted, were fallen. They spoke of themselves that way. At the same time, they became great acharyas. So their Vaishnava humility didn't get lost when they became Vaishnava acharyas. Their qualification didn't get lost because they were in the service of Nawab Hussein Shah. Although it can be if one's bhakti isn't sufficiently strong. So when we move into the world, doing whatever we're doing, going on Harinam or going to work or doing whatever we're doing, primary attention needs to go to our bhaktir avyabhicharini. Mai chananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. And how does that become possible? Acharya upasana, by shelter of the personality of a spiritual master representative of Krishna, then we have access. In Rupa Goswami's language, in nectar devotion, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's Guru Pada Ashraya. Same meaning. Guru Pada Ashraya, shelter at the feet of a spiritual master. To enter into the house of bhakti, the realm of bhakti. And what is that bhakti? Undivided devotion to the personality. You've got it. In its perfect stage, it's the residents of Vrindavan. They don't know anything but Krishna. They don't want to know anything but Krishna. Even if something else comes along, they don't know it, they don't want to know it. They only have devotion to Krishna. That's all. That's all. Nothing else. To a superlative degree. But to cultivate that, the principle of shelter, just shelter in Krishna in our lives, whatever the expression of our lives may take, we're all individuals. So it's going to express, our individuality will be expressed in some individual way. The operative principle is shelter, exclusive shelter of Krishna. Cultivate that. In any case, that's bhakti. I'll end there, see if there's any discussion. Yeah.
In Srila Prabhupada's purport, I'm hearing a strong element of a brahmana's independence in terms of, because of him serving the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord, then he has this sort of supreme independence where, not supreme, I didn't mean to use the word supreme independence, but he has this independence which isn't there in the other ashrams. The chaturas are guided by the brahmanas and so on, etc. So my question is that within a Vaishnava society, like our own, like in ISKCON, then we don't have brahmanas or persons with brahminical qualifications. They have to manifest a cooperation. At the same time, their position of being independently, let's say, thoughtful, a word Prabhupada used before, it seems to me can be eclipsed in situations such as, for example, when we as let's say the GBC takes a particular stand on a particular issue, although there's been a divide in terms of the members, in terms of the conclusion of a particular topic, but by vote this is concluded, this will be the stand of ISKCON on a particular issue. And there have been famous ones in the past concerning bhakti, jiva, guru, and even a contemporary one which is getting a lot of attention these days is the homosexuality one. So there's a divide amongst persons with brahminical qualifications and such thought. But then we take like a overall sort of stance, institutional stance, on a particular issue. So how do we reconcile the need for Brahma to manifest his independently thoughtfulness and regard certain issues at the same time, not creating an imbalance in terms of the need to balance within an institutional scenario, or vice versa, the need to balance and then leaving aside the independently thoughtfulness that's necessary for Brahma?
That's not a small topic. Three quick things. Look to our founder Acharya, and he encouraged independent thoughtfulness. At the same time, he encouraged following. Another, this guy, bullet, is the Supreme Court of the United States just made some, like, interesting decisions. And they were dissenting opinions to those Supreme Court decisions amongst the Supreme Court members, saying, you know, this decision is rubbish. So that's within the U.S. government, it's a Brahminical-like function, supposed to be at least. And they're not administrators, they're judicial, they're Brahminical, they're, you know, what's right and wrong, based on the things that they're supposed to be looking at to decide what's right and wrong, or this or that. It's an intellectual or Brahminical function. But there's dissenting opinion. Now, the dissenting judge or judges in a 5-4 decision, what are they supposed to do? They express their dissenting opinion and they move with the prevalent opinion. Now, since that, some of those decisions, there's some governors and other people and other people that say, you know, harumph, I'm not going to comply. That's, you know, part of democracy, I guess, you know. People can say harumph. They can dissent. And in your question specifically was within ISKCON, how does this work? Dissenting opinions can be expressed at the same time then one follows. And what does that look like? It depends on the circumstance. Depends on the circumstance. In any case, whatever the circumstance may be, if dissent is expressed in a Vaishnava respectful manner, and similarly those that have the prevalent view look to the, you know, others who have an opinion that are expressing that other opinion in a respectful manner, they respectfully, you know, not accept that dissenting opinion, but honor that someone may have a dissenting opinion. And, you know, then a third point, in some cases, there's room for both. In some cases. And a broad, something that Badrinarayan Swami quotes regularly, I put a slide into the Unity and Diversity presentation I made at the internet, the ILS. Intelligence, a symptom of intelligence is being able to hold two opposite statements at the same time. That takes intelligence. Sometimes it's, you know, not intelligence, sometimes it's foolishness, because it's not really intelligent to take two opposing things at the same time. But when it is appropriate, it takes intelligence. Then another point, it's related to this, but it has to do with culture and the absence of culture. Acharyas or authorities that may hold differences of view, and how they should respectfully present their view or respectfully disagree, and not like, you know, a snotty kind of, all due respect, Prabhu, but you're garbage. Kind of, you know, that goes on. That's not culture. A cultured person doesn't do like that. A cultured person, just like, you know, Yudhisthira and Arjuna or Yudhisthira and Bhima might disagree. And Bhima would state, you know, I disagree. But you're the elder brother and I'll follow. And that's respectful. So now what Nukul and Sahadev supposed to do? Well, they respect Bhima, they respect Yudhisthira, they follow Yudhisthira because he's the elder brother. And if Yudhisthira later on says, you know what, Bhima, you were right, let's do what you said. This is prerogative. It's part of culture. And when there's no culture, then everything breaks down. These order breaks down. And harmony breaks down. So how do you get culture? My understanding is without respect, there's no culture, there's no relationship, there's no fabric, there's no social fabric. For example, if the brahmanas are haughty, like here, the brahmanas become very angry. Brahmanas are supposed to be tolerant, but here they're becoming angry. Why are they becoming angry? Because they're thinking friends, enemies. It's just part of the behavior of bodily conception. I'm a brahmana. You're not, lined up with my view of things. And so the next line is, get a stick. They're brahmanas. Get a stick. That's the next line. So that's not a further symptom of one who's not a brahmana. They're not brahmanas. So if one's going to be an independently thoughtful individual, how do I exercise that independent thoughtfulness? How do I respect the position of authority that's invested in some persons while I have a dissenting opinion? It's like, how does a member of a family disagree with the head of the family? Or, what's the etiquette for that one? What's the culture for that one? And so on. We don't understand these things so well, but to speak of live them, because we're not very cultured. And once again, so the beginning part of that culture is accepting the authority of the personality of Godhead. And then that comes by the position of our acharya. So if we're going to accept within ISKCON at least, we have one founder acharya. And our founder acharya invested, specifically to your question, invested some responsibility, and with responsibility authority within the GBC. Supposing the GBC makes a mistake, well, that's, others will be negatively impacted, but more so will be those that made the mistake. Ultimately, Krishna is in charge and Krishna will correct. Because if Krishna isn't in charge, we're in big trouble. If Krishna is in charge and that's the mission that we're following, Krishna will correct. If it's the principle of submission, Mayi Chananya Yogi, Krishna will correct. That's what he says in Bhagavad Gita. Chipram Bhavati Dharmatma. Personally, he intervenes and corrects. And he does. I've seen Krishna personally intervenes and corrects. Now there may be some, let's say, some like rampant or wanton deviation without referring to particular historical events. That has happened. Krishna corrected and person got damaged and Krishna's giving resources for that, repair of that damage. And it happens on a smaller scale. But one of the things that's the greatest damage of all is damaging of faith. And so if I have a dissenting opinion, I have to be very careful about how I express that dissenting opinion and not break the fabric of our founder Acharya's system of authority and responsibility to carry out what is authorized. It's very similar. What I'm saying is just the context different, but similar principle, the principle of being authorized to be guru, on my order. So when there's the order given, that's the operative principle. And if the order isn't given, then one may be qualified and should not do. You know, it's very delicate matter. I'll just give a practical example, aside from the practical ones that you mentioned. The Shastra Advisory Council, SAC, was requested, please do research on whether, in the presence of one's guru, a disciple of guru may initiate. The paper said it was done historically. However, Bhakti Siddhanta and Srila Prabhupada were repeatedly clear and emphatic about no, not in the presence of. So that was the paper. And then by deliberation, it was mainly Radhanath Maharaj, indicated, however, when the order of the spiritual master is given, it must prevail. So in the case of the spiritual master instructing, I want you to initiate, it must be followed. So now the spiritual master should be honoring, there's the indication of the Shastra Advisory Committee, and there's Prabhupada and Bhakti Siddhanta. If Prabhupada or Bhakti Siddhanta had said, I want you to initiate in my presence, voila. And without that, no. So there's this very fine discretion matter that at least in a few examples, it was carried out. The spiritual master wished that their disciple in their presence accept disciples. Now that's being reviewed. Was that a wise move or exception to make? Or should it be that although that prerogative may be there, the principle may be there, within ISKCON, guru should abide by what Bhakti Siddhanta and Prabhupada repeatedly indicated, you know, for acharya-like reasons, for, you know, a very widespread organization as opposed to the other kind, where Hriday Chaitanya mainly resided in one place and, you know, he just initiated there. He could have, in his presence, had somebody initiate, which is different than a global society. So it's an acharya decision. And our founder acharya and his... So these are delicate matters. And an independently thoughtful person may say, well, my independent thoughtfulness and research and contemplation and discussion with other brahmanas leads me to this conclusion. And then another one that says, well, that's interesting because I did the same thing and I came to that conclusion. Now, as a society, how do we function? This conclusion, that conclusion from independently thoughtful, well-wishing, not, you know, otherwise motivated persons. There has to be some authority system. And our founder Acharya gave that authority system. So we abide by that. And if Krishna is not pleased or our predecessor Acharyas are not pleased, there are ways that they can move things in the hearts of persons or various ways. So let it not become, you know, clash or politics and I'll go lobby this vocal GBC person and he'll turn the tide to take my point of view because I'm independently thoughtful Prabhu. So again, it comes back to respect. Without respect, everything breaks down. And even that independently thoughtful person, minus the quality of respect, their capacity to be genuinely independently thoughtful for higher purposes gets covered with other purposes. And it happens. It happens. That's not an easy subject. You want to follow up?
Yeah, just to clarify.
Then you can take next. Go ahead.
To clarify my, for me it's very clear, everything that you've just discussed, and the necessity in following an authority system, otherwise things break down. That's almost for me it just seems self-evident. Where I, on a personal level, perhaps need some reconciliation with, is when it comes to particularly spiritual conceptions, which may be divergent, or they're obviously variegated, and then some of them are divergent from one another. So I'm hearing the cultural respect point very much within your discussion, your answer to me. The cultural respect being there, but also, you know, the reality that there are going to be divergent views amongst these, let's say, independently thoughtful persons, which can be totally okay.
Totally okay.
But then the confusion comes up when there's an overall sort of, an overall consensus on a particular issue, which we're expected to perhaps teach to the next generation of devotees. That's where I personally
a practical path to suggest. Two parts. One is positive, the other is, you know, injunction and prohibition. Injunction is there is a forum for such subject matters. And for your information, this is like an Istagosti kind of, you know, what we're doing right now, but that's okay, as opposed to Bhagavatam class. Amongst our JBC leadership, there's a growing sense, strongly growing sense, that JBC should do less of the executive function and more of the deliberative function. Meaning, it's oversee, make sure the executive function gets done, but push it down so that both, but you know, yes, lead, but give that function by training and guidance and so forth to others and step back in the executive area and be more deliberative. But so do both, but be more deliberative and spend lots and lots of time together going through these points and inviting persons, independently thoughtful persons, to come into the forum of deliberation in various ways that can be, you know, practically accommodated, in form of paper or personal, or be part of the discussion when it's discussion time or whatever, on issues that are of philosophical substance and then have practical implication. Without giving the names of some of those topics, you know, they're on the list. We can discuss what those topics are if you'd like. And, you know, prepare something. So it's an invitation as your GBC representative from the global GBC to you. Prepare something. And not just it'll go into a suggestion box that nobody will look at. It's in, as time moves on, a number of very sensitive, important topics that just get pushed over there because we're dealing with administrative important things doesn't get dealt with, and it's not good. We need to take that on, and that means also inviting other independently thoughtful persons that are keen on the subject to be involved in the subject, the discussion of the subject. and the decision-making process, not just so that they'll be on board when we make our decision. That's political. But so we make the right decision. That's the spirit, I can tell you. So there's a injunction or a positive path. Something not to do, my strong advice, would be be patient and not get into, well, on the one hand, but then on the other hand. There are different views, and I may hold this, there's so many, but not to beat the drum and play the trumpet on, here's another view, please don't just know that there's one view, there's another view, do, 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 boom, boom, boom. You know, don't do that. I don't advise. Be patient and put energy into this forming of the proper view on a spiritual topic, a spiritual conceptual or siddhanta topic. What is our siddhanta on this? Invest in that way and don't invest in the other way. If it comes up, we've talked about this. You can say, here's a view. I see that there's another view. And, I feel invested in this particular subject and I'm participating in, I've been invited to participate in, helping to, bring clarity to this particular topic. Next question. So then the next generation understands, oh, there's different views. Oh. And it's not, I'm not going to make a big deal about it because the person that's teaching me is not making a big deal about it. What they're doing is they're participating, it's showing by example, participate in this more cultured way of addressing than, making division. Doesn't help. Aside from that particular topic, in principle, it teaches dissension as opposed to respecting unity and diversity. So those that are in the position of leadership need to be respecting unity and diversity. Those that are taking a function of giving guidance and training and association to newer devotees need to do it also. But it starts at the top. It has to come down. And then going forward in time, we're creating something that's wholesome and enduring. And observing principles that our founder Acharya, by his own example, showed. That's what ISKCON is when Prabhupada gave it. It's what it is today and going forward should be the same. You ready for your question? You have the microphone?
When you mentioned that the brahmanas must be respectful to have authority, I've read several places in the Vedas that's like
brahmana must be what?
Like a brahmana must be like respectful to have like any qualification. But I've read several places that like a brahmana would do something like completely abominable.
And a brahmana what?
Like a brahmana would do something completely abominable.
He would do something abominable?
Yeah, like he would have some really bad character or something, and the mood was, oh, he's a brahmana, so we shouldn't punish him. Like he would do something of like bad character, but like the mood of like the authorities in that society would say, oh, well, he's a brahmana, so we can't punish him because he's under Krishna.
And it sounds like the first mentor, when she first is partially not
That's what you're referring to? Okay. Or Ashwatthama. These things are subtle. And there's the 933 Bhagavad Gita verse where Bhajate Mam Ananya Bhak, when that principle was there, which doesn't apply to either Sringi or to Ashwatthama. So then, but when that's there, Krishna will personally address, and it's not specific, it's not restricted to a Brahmana, it's for one who is Bhajate Mam Ananya Bhak, whatever their position is, undivided devotion to Krishna, Brahmana or otherwise. Then you have to look at, you know, is there undivided devotion to Krishna or not? Then over here is in the Bhagavatam, these are two examples from the Bhagavatam, showing Brahminical culture and how Brahminical culture is to be respected. But we know what Krishna said, for example, about Ashwatthama. Don't worry, Arjuna, that you may be committing Brahma Hatya by killing of a Brahmana. Because what he did, he's not a Brahmana. He's Brahma Bandhu, but he's not a Brahmana. Son of a Brahmana, but disqualified. So go ahead. Punish him. That's Krishna speaking. So, again, it's delicate. In the end, Arjuna didn't kill him because he had the capacity, which an extraordinary person may have, that he could understand Krishna's intention. Kill him, but don't kill him. Punish him. So he was punished for his heinous deed, killing five boys in their sleep, cutting off their head. Brahmana? My God. So, Brahmanas are to be punished when heinous non-Brahminical activities are done. It's not Brahmana, nor is it Vaishnava. Unless it's Bhajate Mam Ananya Bhak, it's just one of those extraordinary things induced by Krishna, which, again, is delicate. How do we understand? So that there's a principle given in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna will correct those situations. And it may not be the way that we would correct those situations. Krishna does things in his own way. And he's not asleep. He's wide awake and fully in control. So circumstances may come in someone's life that there are times when someone who has acted in from an exalted position that needs to be reprimanded or disciplined in some form or fashion. And it's a delicate matter, you know, for the fifth time. Not easy to be, it's easy to say blah blah, and it's another thing to understand this is an act that has, if I do or if I don't do, it has consequences. If I don't do, there's consequences. If I do, there's consequences. What's the right thing? Not easy. But there are certainly cases where brahmanas are to be disciplined. Anything else? Hey, Mangi, you got something? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.